for hearing, and the next submitter on our list is Seaview Trust. Good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon.
Thanks very much for taking the time to put in your submission, which we've read, so you don't need to read that out to us, but you're very welcome to speak to it and highlight key points for us.
Great, thank you. I'm Graham McKenzie, and I'm here on behalf of Araka Farms and the Seaview Trust. We're a self-contained family dairy farming business, and we're based in the upper Waituna and lower Matau catchments. We also have support blocks at Fort Rose, Coate Bay and Tuatapere. I farm this land with my two brothers and my father, and we're fourth generation dairy farmers here in Southland. The significance of the plan is that we sit within five of the physiographic units and possibly four of the freshwater management units, and that's not including sub-units if they're to be divided up in the limit setting process. Whilst we have concerns with certain rules within the plan, the primary focus of our submission was to highlight the differentiation of our farms by the use of the physiographics. Mm-hmm. We apply similar farming practices with a focus on a low to no input system across all of the properties. Rules specific to the physiographic zones will require large changes to our systems, and in some cases, adding pressure to other properties by having to take pressure off others. We've also recently put a farm on the market, which we didn't sell. Physiographics was one of the major drivers for people trying to lower the price of that farm when it was on the market. Physiographics are a useful tool in supporting good management practices on farm, but fall short when used as a regulatory tool. The physiographic zones help inform good management practice on farm and allow farmers to consider the risk to water quality within different zones and variants. Physiographics do not inform actual water quality in stream and in the receiving environments. And an example with these variants within the physiographics is that if you have an issue of overland flow as a variant and you put in drainage, that variant then changes, but if the mats are actually locked into the plan and cannot be changed, that becomes a major issue. You've changed the characteristics of a zone, but it can't be taken outside the plan to be changed. Physiographics as used in the proposed plan are heavily environmentally weighted and are yet to be fully tested against social, cultural and economic factors under the RMA. We have an opportune vehicle to in a collaborative limit setting process to address the four major pillars of the RMA. Given robust data, this could be started now, with the proposed plan forming the fundamentals of this process, but not determining any outcomes. I make comment on the objectives, and basically they just seem heavily weighted environmentally, and in the case of objective 9, that elevates environmental values above the social, cultural and economic values. In regards to policies, I made mention of a change to the number 2, the iwi indicators, making sure that while it was important to address that, rewording to give consideration to iwi values rather than elevating their values above other things. Policy 16, we indicated that should be removed as a policy because it elevates the focus on farming above all other industry or other sectors that may have environmental impacts. And the term strongly discouraged should be changed to mitigate the impacts. I think strongly discouraged is very strong wording. I'll just make key points of another couple policies and then not all the rules that we mentioned in the submission, just a couple key ones.
Yep.
In regards to policy 33, wetlands, we had support but amend to prevent the reduction in area, function and quality of significant wetlands. We believe that there are some areas on farm that could be caught up in the definition of a wetland that couldn't quite possibly be one. And then in regards to policy 40, that was with alignment of consents to the limit setting process. Consents are granted for a specific time to provide certainty for investment, and if you allow shorter duration, it doesn't provide consideration and adds to the cost of the consent renewal process. We don't believe they should be aligned with the freshwater management units in the limit setting process, because we're yet to know how this will be applied, and the timing of the community decisions is still hasn't been decided. So we fully support the catchment limit setting process. We actually believe that it is the ultimate vehicle which we can be making good decisions for the environment in Southland. Some of the rules on the plan go a little bit too far and actually predetermine some of that limit setting process. And I think I'll leave the rules, but just really wanted to make some comments on Appendix N. Mm-hmm. Using, we farm in the Waituna catchment, which, as you're well aware, we had some issues a number of years ago. Although as a community we had to be reactive as opposed to proactive in our response to the Waituna Lagoon, farmers uptook a lot of actions on their farm, and that was actually done through sustainable milk plans, which are in essence similar to what Appendix N outlines.
Yeah.
Now farmers undertook these plans and they were revisited after 2 years, and it was found that there was actually a high level of engagement and the farmers had actually gone above and beyond what they'd said they'd do in the plan to make changes on their farm for the environment. There was also a great community approach on a catchment scale to get a lot of work done, and highlighted by the government putting the funding in last week as well. So in regards to Appendix N, I think in the plan it does go a little bit too far, and there were changes in the Section 42A report to Appendix N. But I think the key message there is that these plans need to be something that a farmer can pick up, do themselves. A living document has been mentioned earlier, and also like to give credit to the Land Sustainability Officers. That's been mentioned multiple times today, because yep. It's a full engagement process. And if these can be done by industry bodies but align with Appendix N, and so that they're easy to understand, and the farmers actually use them as tools and they can grow them however they want, I think that is the key to this plan.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Are you happy now if we move to questions?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. George, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rule 13, you've made mention about mapping tile drains. A number of other submitters have said while they can't find existing drains, they may be able to find the outlet,
yeah.
But they are quite happy to map new drains or map where they find stuff against going out and finding a network underground that they never put in. And so is your view still, is you oppose Rule 13, or are you happy to do what you can to meet that requirement to understand what is actually happening on your property?
Yeah, I believe that it's probably something that should sit back in Appendix N. As a farmer, it's helpful to know where your tile drains are, and particularly when you put new ones in. But there are existing networks out there that people have no idea, and it's, you're not asking that, but I think it's something that probably should sit in Appendix N as opposed to be a specific rule.
Okay, and you make comment about Rule 40 and 41. You've asked for the two to be combined, but 40 talks about silage stacks and the management thereof, and 41 talks about leachate and the management thereof. Do you still hold that view?
Yes, I do. I think that silage, it was just more for simplicity reasons, could be contained in the same rule, because it does refer to silage, and then Rule 41 is specifically silage leachate,
which is quite a high contaminant. So
yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, just in regards your submission point on policy 2, you may be familiar with the section 42A.
Yep.
That's, so you're, that addresses your.
Yes.
Point. Thanks.
Mark.
Thanks. Yes. you suggest that the word wetland should be replaced with significant wetlands. So what's, how would you define a significant wetland?
It would probably be a case of looking at probably area. It's sort of a difficult one, because the reason why I mention that is because I'm thinking of wet areas in a paddock that actually could fall into the definition. So it's more a case of removing those so they don't get caught up, rather than trying to define as anything.
Okay. I think the plan or somebody says about, you know, areas of rushes and that's obviously not a wetland, but an area of red tussock, for example, would that be a wetland?
It could be. I think it also talks about habitat as well, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, wetland is normally defined as an area that's got plants adapted to wet conditions. So it is a bit loose. I'm just seeing. But yeah, certainly it's not intended to be rushes or an area in a paddock that has reverted to being a bit wet, but one that I suppose it has never been modified significantly anyway. Yeah. Okay. I was going to ask you about Appendix N, but you support those, so that's resolved. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And I also want to just ask you about Policy 33. I understand the concern that you have. The plan has a definition of natural wetland, and under that definition, that excludes wet pasture, damp gully heads, areas that have patches of rushes, etc. It excludes effluent ponds, farm dams, things like that. So with Policy 33 focused on natural wetlands, I think that would address your concern.
Yeah, it would.
Okay, good. That's the only thing I wanted to ask you about, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming in.